हरिः
ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 25. Narad Muni continued. Thereafter, the same giant Vijay, the two doorkeepers of Lord Vishnu, took birth as Ravana and Kumbhakarna, begotten by Vishrava in the womb of Keshini. They are extremely troublesome to all the people of the universe. Narad Muni continued, My dear king, just to relieve Jayan Vijay of the Brahmana's curse, Lord Ramachandra appeared in order to kill Ravana and Kumbhakarna. It will be better for you to hear narrations about Lord Ramachandra's activities from Markandeya. In the third birth, the same Jayan Vijay appeared in a family of Kshatriyas as your cousins, the sons of your aunt. Because Lord Krishna has struck them with his disc, all their sinful reactions have been destroyed, and now they are free from the curse. These two associates of Lord Vishnu, Jayan Vijay, maintained a feeling of enmity for a very long time. Because always thinking of Krishna in this way, they regained the shelter of the Lord, having returned home back to Godhead. 44-47. Srila Prabhupada comments, Whatever their position, certainly Jayan Vijay always thought of Krishna. Therefore, at the end of the Maushala Leela, these two associates of the Lord returned to Krishna. There's no difference between Krishna's body and Narayana's body. Therefore, although they visibly entered the body of Krishna, they actually re-entered Vaikuntha Loka as the doorkeepers of Lord Vishnu. Through Lord Krishna's body, they returned to Vaikuntha, though they seem to have attained Sayuja Mukti in Krishna's body. Yeah. So, we have the thing is that they're always thinking of the Lord, so they're absorbed in the Lord, right? Then when they're killed by the Lord, by the Sudarshan Chakra, they're purified of all their sin. One, by, always remembering the Lord, then they're technically purified on that point. But being purified of that mentality when they're killed with the Lord Sudarshan, right? Then they went back to Godhead. So they're in the assembly, then they merge into Krishna's body, but actually it's just they went back to Vaikuntha. Because we have to remember, Krishna is unlimited. Everything's within Krishna. So Vaikuntha is also within Krishna. Right? Yes?
If Nrsimha Dev is not, he is Paravasta.
Yes.
But we are trying to establish here that Krishna is this supreme.
Yes, he is the original Paravasta.
So that's the proof that only he could liberate them completely?
It's just showing he is more powerful than.
Even than Paravasta.
Yeah. Means of that because of his attractive features and all that, so they'll be more absorbed. Because they didn't really understand his position, what with Krishna when they do.
I remember
saying
specifically his attractiveness.
Yes, his attractiveness.
So much that they couldn't stop thinking of
him. Yes, so they would think of him greater. Because Nrsimhadeva just happened at that point. So in general, Vishnu was there, but he wasn't making the connection. Also with Ramachandra, weren't making the connection. Like that, but the attractiveness of Krishna is so great in their absorption. Maharaj Yudhishthira inquired, O my Lord, Narad Muni, why was there such enmity between Hiranyakashipu and his beloved son Prahlad Maharaj? How did Prahlad Maharaj become such a great devotee of Lord Krishna? Achyutat Mata, kindly explain this to me. Srila Prabhupada comments, All the devotees of Lord Krishna are called Achyutatma because they follow in the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj. Achyuta refers to the infallible Lord Vishnu, whose heart is always infallible. Because the devotees are attached to the infallible, they are called Achyutatma. Because Atma means one's the life or what's, you know, one's position. So if one's always absorbed in Krishna, that Krishna is one's life and soul, then one is Achyutatma. So, yeah. Conclusion. The Supreme Lord is equal to everyone, Vishaya. In the previous canta, however, it has been observed that the Lord sided with Indra by killing the demons on his account. Therefore, the Lord was clearly partial to Indra, although he is the supersoul in everyone's heart. 7.1.1 purport, Shamshaya and Purva Paksha, right? So that's the doubt, and then the example is given. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, is always transcendental to material qualities. Therefore, he's called Nirguna, or without qualities. Right? Because only if you have attachment on the material platform, then there's hatred. So then you can say there's duality there. You know, there's partiality. But because he doesn't have material qualities, he doesn't have a material body, therefore there's no material attachments or identity. So from that point alone, he'll be impartial. Because he is unborn, he does not have a material body, be subjected to attachment and hatred. Because of the bodily conception of life, the conditioned soul thinks that when the body is annihilated, the living entity is annihilated, right? So then you're thinking, oh, he's doing a wrong, because the demons are being killed, the demigods are being maintained, because we put that the benefit or loss is all to do with the body, not with the soul. Right? Does that make sense? That's the difficulty. We think the body is the actual thing, but not the soul. So anything done that's nice for the body, we'll say, okay, that's a benefit. Anything that's not good for the body, we'll say, that's a problem. Right? Yeah. Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the Supreme Controller, the Supersoul of all living entities. Because he has no material body, he has no false conception of I and mine. It is therefore incorrect to think he feels pleasure or pain when blaspheming or offered prayers. Because here, we're connecting the qualities and everything to what we call the person, but it's actually the conditioning. We're not necessarily talking about the soul, right? We're dealing with the spiritual platform, we're talking about devotees, the spiritual master, like this associates the Lord. Then we're talking about something that's spiritual. But otherwise, in the general category, we're not. We're not doing that. This is impossible for him. Thus he has no enemy and no friend. Because if somebody is nice to you, you'll say they're friend. Someone's not nice, you'll say they're enemy. But since enemy, these things don't bother him, therefore how will have a friend and enemy? Thus not. When he chastises the demons, it is for their good. And when he accepts the prayers of the devotees, it's for their good. He is affected neither by prayers nor by blasphemy. 6.1.6.20 and 25. This is the utra. So that's the counter, right? Because they're saying no, he is partial, and here's the example. Like that, he killed the demons and he supported Indra. So that's the sign that he's actually partial. And then this is the reply. No, because he doesn't have a material body, therefore, and no material qualities. Therefore, there's no attachments and hatred. Therefore, there's no, you know, someone offering prayers is, and someone who's blaspheming, he doesn't see that one is better than the other. Right? It's just how they interact is how he responds. And he makes the point, he's the super soul, so being in everyone's heart, so he does know exactly what's happening.
And they didn't die.
Huh?
And also they didn't die.
Yeah, they don't die because the soul is eternal, but also there's so many things that we don't know, but super soul does know. Right? It means whatever our inner thoughts, he knows, even if we don't know. Sometimes we don't even know things. You know, we're living with ourselves, but we don't even know things about ourselves. Right? But with Krishna, because he's living there, he knows. And so therefore the reciprocation is perfect. Therefore, by enmity or by devotional service, by fear, by affection or lusty desire, by all of these or any of these, if a conditioned soul somehow or other concentrates its mind upon the Lord, the result is the same. For the Lord, because of his blissful position, is never affected by enmity or friendship. So however you relate to him, he will relate back. So therefore it's the same. You have an interaction with the Lord. Right? But depending upon what kind of interaction, how it's favorable or not, that will set up the position in which you interact with the Lord. Yes?
It's not even necessarily personal.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Yes. No, only when there's that favorable affection, then it actually goes beyond. Because Paramatma is a person, but we're not dealing with him personally. You know? Our idea is if we're interacting with a person, you know, with an embodied living being, we're being personal. But in by actuality, it's only when you're dealing with the person according to their nature and interests and all that, then it actually becomes personal. Right? Let us say, just for example, Acharyas, Mr. Carnegie. Right? Have you heard of Mr. Carnegie? Okay. So, Mr. Carnegie points out that Mr. Smith works in the factory all day. Right? Now, it's basically a boring job, so Mr. Smith is not necessarily going to be inspired. He's not inspired. He doesn't do as much work. You do not make as much profit. Now, if you go over and spend a little time with Mr. Smith, and ask how his family is, or this or that, and you're smart enough to actually remember these things, you know, then it even gets better. You know, how is the wife? How's this? How's that? How's it going? You know, like that. Heard the kid was sick. You know, all this kind of stuff. Then he's more inspired because, you know, he thinks, oh, you care, so he works more. Right? So, basically, it looks like it's a nice thing because he's being personal, interacting, but ultimately it's all for business. Right? Now, the whole point is this. It'll be in the modern context. This will be said, he's very personal. Right? But the point is it about the person? Or is it about the concept that he's a worker? And therefore, as a worker, he is just in that position. It could be anybody. Right? So it's not about Mr. Smith. It's about the principle that if you deal nicely with workers, they're more inspired. You understand? That's technically impersonal because it's not about the person. It's about the category. Does that make sense? Yes. It's not that an individual can't be personal. We're just saying the concept is not automatically personal. Because in the modern context, that's taken. Oh, here's a good you know, entrepreneur. He takes care of his people. But it's not about the person. It's about the concept. Right? Does that make sense? Here, one second.
Sometimes we see devotees, they like to shift those positions.
Yes.
Like being personal and then being impersonal, you know.
Yeah, but as we mentioned, what's Carnegie's point? By addressing this, what is benefited?
The benefit is that we get something.
Yes, so it's artha. It's economics. Okay. So you'll see is that the shifting of these things comes by because of the same thing. Devotees will shift them because when it will give profit, they'll shift it one way. And when it will give profit the other, they'll shift it the other. You understand? Only if there is an exposure to a personal dealings, then they may deal personally. But then depending upon their background, then they tend to... There's always the concept that occupation trumps ashram. You know, especially in the world where you want, world of results. It's always results trumps relationships, but the whole point of results is for relationships. It's a very major problem. That's why it's thought that, you know, these third world countries and all these backward places, they're backwards because they don't see it in this perspective. They won't do things that is not good for the family, for profit, so they're not intelligent. You know what I'm saying? You know, the guy has done something good for you, you're trying to help, but then for business, you could do something else and make more profit by not recognizing what he's done. So then it'll be, in the modern context is, no, you have to do that. This is the real world. This is business. There's all kinds of euphemisms to cover up, I always thought what the best one was the Serbians, phrase ethnic cleansing, like that. And so then, or what's the other one? Work will set you free. You know what I'm saying? So all it is this is on the political level, and that's on the economic level. They're just euphemisms to be a rat bag and say that it's all right because I made profit. Because everyone wants profit, so of course, I remember, we went to this kibbutz Nan, and then we were on a tour. And they took us through the Goshala. And in the Goshala, then they had so many cows, they were explaining, because it was a very modernized kibbutz. Most weren't so modernized. And they had the electric, milking machines. And so then they said that there's a certain amount of time that they have to give the milk in, for the whole thing to run efficiently, for the how many cows and this and that. And then the question came up, I can't remember what it was, but it was a very short time, but it must have been a standard amount of time, but it was a very short time. Someone in the group then asked, what happens if they don't give the milk in that time? And then the tour guide turns to the crowd and says, you all like your steak, don't you? And so then they all, I guess that's for steak, cool, it's okay. So that's the thing, is people have these little phrases that by saying them, then a bad thing is suddenly, it's okay. Like I remember, President in L.A. back in the 80s, he had this movie that was, I don't know who made it, but somebody did. I'm not sure how they got away with it, but filmmaker took his camera and got in line with the cows at the slaughterhouse. He just got in the line. Went through the whole thing. So he must have presented as a documentary or something and got away with it, but that wasn't his point. So from the cows, being loaded onto wherever it is to be transferred to, when you have this beautiful little styrofoam little thing with the meat and the little saran wrap on top, making it all looking really good and nicely placed, like that. So he would discuss with people about, they'd ask why you're vegetarian, he explained this and that, and they would say, what's the big deal? It's just like this and that. They didn't connect the two, that there's this cow here, cute and cuddly and furry, and over here then there's some meat. So he'd show them this movie. Guaranteed they become a vegetarian. Guaranteed. It wasn't a nice, these were for the tough nuts, right? So that's the whole point and he was saying what he was surprised about is none of these people made the connection that the meat was a living entity. It was just, you have vegetables, you have meat, you have this. It's just all, part of the same. All nicely packaged, all put. So the problem comes up is that these euphemisms are used, and then it's just, it's business. Oh, that's the reality. You don't understand. This is how the world works. And it just goes on and on and on and on. All it is nice little things to cover up that they're rat bags. That's all. Nasty people. Self-centered people, right? So basically, conditioned thought tends to do this on a variety of levels, as we gave example on the political and the economic. People do that on the intellectual level, as we talked about the academics, you know, as you come up with a point that this is wrong, and then they'll, you know, pontificate on their position and, you know, how they're the great this and that and papers and, you know, just go on and on and on. Same thing. Or emotional, people emotionally get you. Or so why is this all happening? Because they are attached. They identify with the body. So therefore, there's affection, there's hatred. Because the same business person, they have some affection for a person, they'll deal in one way. They don't, then it's impersonal. So that's the thing, is that these phrases make it look personal, make it look nice. Like that. Does that make sense? But the problem is it's not actually personal. It's impersonal. Maximum will get up to the level of Paramatma. The Bhagavan is actually about the person. Right? Does that make sense?
Well, you categorize the Hatha as that they have a relationship with the Lord, they're not really spiritual master.
But what's the relationship a Sahajya has with the Lord? But what's the Sahajya doing?
Imagining.
But imagining what?
Himself.
Yes, he's imagining himself, and then what is this self doing?
Enjoying the company.
Right. So, where is the person?
Somewhere. Oh, in the spiritual world.
No. I'm saying, where's the personal in this sahajya? Because it's about themselves. Oh, I want to go down to the Jamuna and get the water. Oh, I want to pour the water, and I want to do this. Where's Krishna? Do they ever mention it? It's just, he's the background of their... It's not about Krishna. Yeah, it's about themselves. That's how you can tell the difference between the meditation of the Sahajiya and meditation of these bona fide.
They're not categorized within the Brahman, or like it's not Brahman or
Dhamman. They're on the left. You have the path, they're on the left. They're karma. Because the point is the real meditation is meditating on the associates of the Lord. Right? In other words, this one goes and gets the water. That one's pouring the water. This one's, you know, making the designs. This one's doing this and that. That's then personal. That has to do with Krishna. Is that what it says? But when it's like, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, but then where's your relation with everybody else? You know, you're the one that does this? No, Lalita does that. You know, so how is this about Krishna? No. We're saying it's in between personal and Bhagavan, because we're accepting his supremacy and things like that. Right? We're accepting the supremacy, but the difficulty comes is that it's only because of the supremacy that we're dealing with the greatness, or like this. It's not about what does he want. It's like, okay, if I don't do what God wants, then, you know, I'll end up as a little pile of ash after the lightning bolt hits me. Or, you know, how you say, the middle of my living room, the crack will open up and I'll fall in, and then it'll close before anybody knows what happens, right? You know, maybe after it closes, and what happened to Grandma? And then does this, the earth gets burp, you know, what? Yeah, like that, you know, so the whole thing is it's... It's based on fear in that. So it is a relationship, because you're basically all modern religions are all based on fear. So, but if they're thinking of God, they're getting a benefit. That's why it says here, even with fear, then they're, because fear is afraid of loss, or they're going to die. If I don't do this, then there'll be a problem. Does that make sense? So the point is Bhagavan means is, why would it be a problem? Why wouldn't God like that? What does he like? How would he like it? Does this make sense? Yeah. Too personal. As opposed to one or three, or two meaning it's bad. We should not be so personal, because then he wants to be Paramatma, and we're forcing him to turn into into Bhagawan, and that's really a bad thing, right? Does that make sense? Point is if you deal with Krishna on the personal platform, then he's there like that. That you don't have to, because these are mechanics. See, we're still worried about the mechanics. It's not about Krishna. The mechanics that we're talking about, that's actually Jnana Shakti. So it's technically connected with Brahman. Kriya, then you're dealing with Paramatma. But Icha, then you're dealing with Bhagavan. It's not that he's not Bhagavan all the way through, but it's that we don't deal with him that way. Right? You know, you have the guy, and therefore we're respectful to him because he's the president. But when he's not the president, nobody cares. I remember reading this article, I don't remember who it was, but they were talking about their experience on the inauguration of the new president. So he's the president there. He's there, he welcomes the other guy, this and that, and then there's some little thing, and then he stands to the side. And then suddenly up to that point, all the guards are there, all the this, that, the whole thing's about him. He stands to the side, and then it all shifts to him. And he said, you can just feel the energy just gone, and you're just a guy again. You know, you used to be the president, so, you know, that's a special thing, how many guys are the president. So you can sit around and tell your grandchildren and that, and, you know, all that kind of jazz. But otherwise, you're just a guy. It may have been the peanut farmer. You don't know. Like there was a guy who was a peanut farmer, and then he became the president. Then he went back to peanut farming. So, huh? May have been him, but he was just saying how it's just like all it just goes. And also in the Shastra, it talks about Indra. Indra's there; he's sitting on his throne, and everything. Suddenly, there's this whole kerfuffle going on, and then they're coming in, and the new Indra is coming in. Everybody's there, all the attention is to here, and he looks at himself and he sees his garland is faded and all that, and nobody cares about him anymore. If you do, then you'll feel bad, and no one should feel bad in heaven, right? So that
Indian moped, then it doesn't have the purple switch and indicator,
yeah.
So it just stops.
Yes, just like that. See, the moped, it's straight out of the heavenly planets. You know, just you can think of it that way. You can just think of it. Then you just have to worry about the rakshasas coming and eating you after your petrol. Then, yes, the punya bhumi. Yes, so your punyas run out, and so. Yes, yes, like that. Because otherwise, if you'd be in anxiety and this and that, so there's no anxiety. Yeah. That's why it's Amara. So you understand? So we're only dealing because of a category. It's not about the person. That's what we mean by the Paramatma level. Right? And technically it's not even that if we're just dealing with the things, the mechanics and all that, it's the Brahman level. Like all the guys that are just doing and getting things done and seeing that, you know, the White House is going on, it's just the Brahman level because they're just serving the president. But it's not about interacting or like that. Someone who's following all the rules and all that and different things like that, then it says Paramatma. How many people personally have a relationship with the president? Right? A couple of people. That's it. You know, he's the president, but he has a relationship and stuff like that. You know, so you might have, I think there was also this one... Not sure if they, some book or something, it was about I don't know what it was called, but basically kind of like the head of house. He's like the head butler or the head in charge of taking care of the house. But those positions don't change with the president. You know, it's just they do that and they're just an office. So I think he went through like 4 or 6 presidents. So someone like that gets to know the presidents and all the things like that. Does that make sense? Or, you know, the big guys in office, one or two may have a, you know, sense. So this is important to see this difference in relationship, because then we understand what is our position and how we're dealing. Like that. Yes?
The Prabhupada described Paramatma realization as realization of the absolute with the material opulences.
Yes.
And Bhagavan is realization of the absolute with fully complete opulences.
Yes.
So considering the Paramatma is the material of the, it would seem that the maximum relationship would be a relationship with him here.
Yes.
But not there.
There is no concept of Brahman or Paramatma in the spiritual world. Because you're dealing with the Lord Himself directly. Why would you worry about that? Does that make sense? So these two concepts, so they're spiritual, are concepts that are here in the material world. Only people here in the material world have that viewpoint. Spirit, just like here, we will separate, you know, Satchit, Ananda, and Lisa, but in the spiritual world, they don't do that. You know, we do it so that we can tell the difference, and we're analyzed. So for Sambandhi Gyan, we're doing that. But for them, it's the Ananda that's the main. Pleasing the Lord is the main. So to do that, you have to do an activity. To do the activity, you have to have an environment, ingredients, you know, attitude, everything like that that's used. So it goes down like that. So it's all focused on the Icha, right? That's supported by the Kriya. That's supported by the Jnana. But here, because we're trying to reawaken that, because we already have that, but who's the Icha? It's us. And so whoever we can get, and whatever, you know, plan we can get to be the center of attention, you know, then those people are considered, you know, closer. And then the environments in which you can function like that or prefer to get those particular results, that's your jnana. Does that make sense? You know, it's just people like different environments. Does that make sense? You know, very different environments. Like, let's say, an example, you know, some people like, how do you say? One's up north, right? Northern Europe or stuff like that. You come outside, I go, wow, this is cold. But the other devotee just takes in a deep breath and goes, fresh. And I'm going, fresh? No, it's called, the spelling's called freezing. And they say, fresh? You know what I'm saying? You know, well, then you go down south, and then I'll say, ah, this is nice, this is pleasant. And they're going, oh, this is hot, you know, hey, can we turn on the AC, you know. But, you understand? So there's an environment, that's the jnana. What is the environment? What's the attitude? How you perceive? Then there's the activities you do within that environment. And for what? To please Krishna. But because it's about ourselves, it's automatic, the Icha. That's why we have to be made aware of it. Otherwise, as far as we're concerned, we're the Icha, everybody else's Kriya and Jnana. That's why we have to adjust and know Krishna's in the position of Icha. And then we're supporting however we can. Like that. That's why then we go through mechanically learning the Jnana. Then we're learning to apply that. And then eventually we're gaining the proper, you know, understanding, mood, and everything like that. That doesn't make sense. So that's why we're using that. In the spiritual world, it comes the other way. You know, it's just like, I see, you know, I say, let's say, I find it interesting. It's like, in one environment, then let's say someone becomes in charge. So then the first thing they do is start organizing things. You know, going around, checking this and that, interacting, dealing, all that, getting the work done. They're just going. So with no facility, they just start doing the work. But then I always see it's always amusing another group who considers themselves far superior and more developed and more sophisticated and all that. They spend the first some, you know, weeks or months setting up their office. Literally. You know, getting the place, working it out, what's the office, getting it painted and all this and that, changing whatever it is, getting the desk, getting the chair, going to Calcutta, doing a whole number. And I've seen many who've done that. By the time they get it ready, they're not in the position anymore. Because they actually have done nothing. And I've seen this happen quite a few times. You know, that's here in my, I've seen it happen. It's really funny. So what is it? They're talking about the whole jnana, get that all around like this and that, and then we'll do something, and then, oh, I can't work without this work. But while you see, it's like, you know, the locals, they just, you know, sit down anywhere and make it happen. So I said, that's the point. So it's just the Vedic system is so far superior because it starts top down. It can't be understood by the mata because most are going bottom up. Those who are actually successful, they can relate to it because they know it's all of the things. So it'd be ideal to have things set up. If not, they can still work. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing. So they may be sitting back in the, you know, at the parent company, you know, big offices, plenty of glass, plenty of chairs, plenty of space. And then when they go down to, you know, do something or that, like that, set up things down in Morocco, they're staying down in some funny little hotels, meeting people, all kinds of people that you don't know if you even want to meet. You know, and stuff like that, because it gets the work done. And eventually then they'll have an office and this, and it builds up. But they'll start from nothing and build up, because they're successful. While others then put all the things into all their infrastructure and this and that, and don't actually make any money. They just spend, and then it goes south. Right? No? Yeah. So that's the thing, is that what we're talking about, this mechanical thing of all this, these three levels, and then saying that, oh, this is technical, no one understands it, guarantee you, people who are successful in the world, who actually make money, actually have control consistently, and can maintain it, they can understand it as easy as anything. They've just never thought of it in a spiritual way. Does that make sense? So... yeah, so how do we get into this? Okay, constant, the Lord is same. Okay. It came up from the personal and impersonal. Right? So then the whole thing comes back is that's why the Bhagavatam's discerning these things, so we can tell what's the difference. Otherwise, oh no, we want to help everybody and this and that. That sounds fabulous, but who is the everybody? Do you have a relationship with everybody? No. You follow etiquette, you're nice to the everybody. But all it is, okay, this category group is our everybody. Because does anybody do everything for everybody? Very rare. Now and again, have you ever met someone who just everybody, they're nice to everyone, they try to help everything, every situation? Like that. I think I've met one or two. You know, just really, really out in the ozone hippies. Like that. Really out there. You know, just always trying and this and that. But those who, you know, others will consider there's something wrong with them. Because they're just so nice, or so this, you know, anything they get, they give away, they're this, they help them. It's nice. You know, and then there's, you know, reality. And so, like you're saying, so in reality, when they say, oh, everybody, it means this particular group. And so if you fit in the group, then you're an everybody. And if you don't fit in the group, you're a nobody.
Technically, you can't express yourself like, out to please everybody, right? Like all the different groups. That's why you follow your Dharma navigation.
That's fine, but then you follow, it's not whimsical.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? You have your duties, you have your nature, you function within that. That person is fine in that environment. Others can't do that. Like that. You know, they get something, they share it with everybody, you know, this and that, they end up with nothing. They're happy because they're with people, they're interacting. You know what I'm saying? They can do that. It's their nature. But everybody has a duty, has a position, and so because of that, then they're able to interact. That's why the Vedic system means you have eight positions and combinations of those positions. Then you have a complete social structure.
And technically, if you follow your structure, it is welfare for everybody.
Yes. But the point is that's still artha and dharma.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it starts becoming the element of personal affair, but it doesn't become spiritual until you see it from the platform of the soul, and then it's only actually spiritual when you see it in connection with Krishna. Is that something? Yeah. Okay. Okay, so somehow or another we concentrate on the Lord. then there's benefit. We said fear, we see modern religions, the gopis and their attraction to Krishna. Any of these things, they'll work, they'll get you to there. But it needs to be what's recommended by the acharyas, because they've worked out what is the processes that work. Right? An individual might function slightly, you know, outside of that. It may work for them, but it won't work for everybody. That's why the general rules are there, because those will work for everybody. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. It is essential to understand and accept the conclusion that the Lord is never affected by enmity or friendship. If one does not accept this, he is classified as a demon, as you will see in the next chapter. Right? Because that's the whole point. Shishupal and all the demons, they think Krishna, you know, being on this material platform, therefore he has friendship, he has enmity, he has all these different things. So unless you accept that he is above these things, he doesn't affect it, you can't actually function nicely on the devotional platform. Is that, yeah? Okay. Okay, important verses. Kamad veshad bhayat sneha yata bhakshesvare mana avesha tad agam hitva bahavas tad gatim gata. Many bindi persons obtain liberation simply by thinking of Krishna with great attention and giving up sinful activities. This great attention may be due to lusty desires, inimical feelings, fear, affection, or devotional service. I shall now explain how he receives Krishna's mercy simply by concentrating one's mind upon him. Right? And giving up sinful activities. So you're focused on the Lord, and then you're giving up what's getting in the way, right? So you're always remembering Krishna and giving up the parts that forgetting Krishna. Right? So you don't forget, you always remember. Is that interesting? Yes.
It's interesting, in Brahma Samhita there's almost the exact same verse.
Yes. That's why it's the essence.
Yeah, it's right at the end.
Yes, yeah. Because after doing all those things, the point is those elements connected to Krishna, that's what works. That's it. Okay, 7131. Gopyaf kamad bhayad kamso dveshach chayad yayo nripa sambandhad vishaya snehad yuyam bhaktya vayam vibho. My dear Yudhishthir, the gopis by their lusty desires, Kamsa by his fear, Shishupal and other kings by envy, Yadus by their familial relation with Krishna, you Pandavas by your great affection for Krishna, and we, the general devotees, by our devotional service, have obtained the mercy of Krishna, right? So now he's explaining these, you know, he said before, through these, now he's showing which devotees, like that. 7132. Katmanopi navenasyat panchanam purusham prati tasmat kenapya padyena manak krishne niveshayat. Niveshayate. Somehow or another, one must consider the form of Krishna very seriously. Right? It's the form of Krishna. You have to be focused on him as a person. Right? Otherwise, then it's just basically you're seeing him more as just an office. Right? That's what you're saying before. Paramatma means he's the supreme Lord, and his office is the control of the material energy. He functions from the spiritual energy, but he's in control of the material energy. But Bhagavan, we don't consider his relationship with the material world. Right? But we consider he's the origin of. Then, by one of the five different processes mentioned above, one can return home back to Godhead. Atheists like King Vena, however, being unable to think of Krishna's form in any of these five ways, cannot attain salvation. Therefore, one must somehow think of Krishna, whether in a friendly way or inimically. Right? So, it's by how it's recommended. He's only saying inimically because they're so absorbed, and they do make it there. But there's only some examples that the point is, it's about connection to the Lord. You connect to the Lord, it all works nicely. Right? But we'll do in a favorable way recommended by the acharyas. That's how we'll. Vermont. Okay. Chapter 2. Hiranyakashipu, king of the demons. Pratigya. The spirit soul is eternal and inexhaustible. Therefore, no one should lament for the passing of the spirit soul from the body. Right? Because based on the last point is how we can appreciate that Krishna is equal to everyone as he's transcendental. And so, therefore, that means he's spiritual. And then the living entity can appreciate it if you understand the soul. Because things happen to the body. So good and bad happen to the body because of our identification and attachment with it. So therefore, because there's attachment and hatred, therefore there's the resultant, how you say, things that happen to the body. Does that make sense? Yeah. So if we understand is that the soul is eternal and not and separate from the body, is not dying with the body, then we can start to appreciate. Is that? Chapter 2 summarizes questions and answers. The rhetorical questions uttered by Yamaraj in verse 44 and 60, as well as the ones sung by the Kulinga bird in verses 30, 53 and 55, do not come under this study. Adhyaya Prakashika. The second chapter describes how Hiranyakashipu, in grief for his brother's death, engaged in destruction of Dharma and pacified his friends by relating a history giving instructions on knowledge. In order to explain that the cause of hating Prahlad was hatred of the Lord, first Narada explains the cause of hatred of the Lord. Right? Because so he hates the Lord, therefore he hates Prahlad, so therefore, you know, then he's giving the background why he hates the Lord. Because that was the question, remember? How is it that this father is so inimical to his son? As described in this chapter, after the annihilation... Oh, okay, wait a second. Oh, yeah. Of Hiranyaksha, Hiranyaksha's sons and his brother Hiranyakashipu were very much aggrieved. Hiranyakashipu reacted very sinfully by trying to diminish the religious activities of people in general. However, he instructed his nephews about a history just to diminish their aggrievement. Because he's looking at it that people do the worship, Vishnu gets the benefit. Just like people do facility for him, he gets the benefit. And so he likes that, he requires that. So he looks at that Vishnu, you know, not being transcendental, then all these worshippers, then that's how he gets maintained and is so powerful. Right? So does that make sense? So if you get rid of the background, then you get rid of the strength. Right? You heard that there's the story, the Nyaya story of the rat. There were these two, I forget, not sure what's the background of the two individuals that were sitting there. And I think it was somebody's house, and there may have been a sadhu or Brahmin or a guest or someone came, or a friend. And they're there, and then they have, the person keeps the grains quite high up. And so then they, as they were sitting and talking, on one side of the room, it's on the other side of the room that this rat comes in, and it jumps up to that place. An amazing jump. You know, it's incredible how far it jumped. You know, stole grains and then went back. And then they would just see this regularly come and jump and go, come and go. And the person is kind of, he says, no matter what I do, I can't keep these grains away from this rat. You know, because it's like, dude, just look at that, how kind of a guy can jump. You know, so he's asking the other, I don't know what to do. And the other one says, well, where does he live? You know, so he finds out where they live. So he says, okay, dig it up. They dig it up, and there's a huge amount of grain under that. Right? Because, you know, rats, they really like to store things nicely. So they took all the grain and everything out. Then, you know, they went back to the conversation and all that. You know, then the rat came back for the grains, but when he went to jump, he couldn't jump so high. Right? Because he didn't have that inspiration. You know, I have so much, you know, I'm doing well. And so he can do amazing things, but as soon as he loses his background, he can't do anymore because of the mental. So Hiranyakashipu's idea is like this with Vishnu. As soon as then you get rid of all the worshippers, all the worship, all the facilities like that, then he'll lose his energy and all this and that, and then he'll be just like everybody else. Because he's done that to all the other demigods. Right? So that makes sense. So that's the point, is why they go after everybody else. It's to diminish Vishnu's position. That's their concept. They don't know that he's transcendental. But he instructed his nephews about a history just to diminish their aggrievement. So he's going to use the Vedanta philosophy here to advantage to get someone over the difficulties they have. Right? Like that, by seeing the difference between matter and spirit. So it works. The demons use it. It's used. It's common. It's standard. But it's his purpose is just so they don't lament, so therefore the house is in a better mood, so therefore life is more happy. It's not so that they'll have self-realization and worship the Lord. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears as the boar and killed Hiranyakashipu's brother, Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu was very much aggrieved. In anger, he accused the Supreme Personality of Godhead of being partial to his devotees and derided the Lord's appearance as Varaha to kill his brother. He began to agitate all the demons and rakshasas and disturb the ritualistic ceremonies of the peaceful sages and other inhabitants of earth. For want of the performance of yajna, sacrifice, the demigods began wandering unseen on earth. Right? So it works on the demigods, but it doesn't work on Vishnu. Now here, agitate the demons and the rakshasas, right? Because you understand, well, aren't they all the same? Remember before, the demons are in the mode of passion, the rakshasas in the mode of ignorance. So it's two different categories. You know, when you go around and do all the crazy stuff, that you generally get the rakshasas and those that group to do. You know, you don't want to make trouble. Right? You understand? In other words, it's like the principle. You're at the baptism, right? But all your men are out off killing everybody else that is your opponents. You know, so you got a good alibi. You're doing something nice. So the demons, they're in the path, they're doing their things like that. But the rakshasas, they're all off doing this stuff like that. And, you know, anyway, the rakshasas. Yeah. No? After finishing the ritualistic funeral ceremonies of his brother, Hiranyakashipu began speaking to his nephews, quoting from the Shastras about the truth of life. To pacify them, he spoke as follows. My dear nephews, for heroes to die before the enemy is glorious. According to their different fruit of activities, living entities come together within this material world and are again separated by the laws of nature. We should always know, however, that the spirit soul, which is different from the body, is eternal, unadjustable, pure, all-pervading, and aware of everything. When bound by the material energy, the soul takes birth in higher or lower species of life according to varying association and in this way receives various types of bodies in which to suffer or enjoy. One's inflictions by conditions of material existence is the cause of happiness and distress. There are no other causes, and one should not be aggrieved upon seeing the superficial actions of karma. Right, so he's just putting it superficial, so don't worry about it. Yes.
That's karma mimamsa.
No, that's Vedanta philosophy. How he's using it is for karma.
But can we call it karma mimamsa or something?
No, because this is about the soul and stuff like that. I mean, karma mimamsa will talk about that. Yes, you could put it in one sense, but it says it would be the jnana. If you're talking, it would be the jnana side of karma. So karma is purva. So it will be based on the rituals and everything themselves, and by doing that, then it'll be good. The uttara means then it's focused on the soul and on the metaphysics. So being focused there, it'll be on that side. Is that so? Hiranyakashipu then related a historical incident concerning a king, Suyagya, who resided in the country named Ushinara. When the king was killed, his queens, overwhelmed with grief, received instructions, which Hiranyakashipu quoted to his nephews. Hiranyakashipu related an account of a Kulinga bird pierced by the arrow of a hunter while lamenting for his wife, who had also been shot by the same hunter. By narrating these stories, Hiranyakashipu pacified his nephews and other relatives and relieved them of lamentation. This having been pacified, Diti and Rushabhanu Hiranyakashipu's mother and sister-in-law. Engage their minds in spiritual understanding, right? So now, the whole problem is if one's in family life to enjoy oneself, if the women and others are lamenting, can you enjoy yourself? Therefore, you want to remove that lamentation so that their life goes on in a practical way, right? But how can you do that unless you deal with the transcendental? You understand? So even though it seems he's doing this, it's you know, jnana misra karma. He's using jnana for the purpose of karma. Right? That's why the shastras always mention intent is important. Right? The intent is correct, then you look at everything else. So, yeah. Yes.
Can we say that the jnana simple karma is temple bhaktas? Sambandha and Abhideya are all the same, but the yojana is
what? Yes, yes. For those in the Vedic culture, then they all start with Dharma, right? Then, and understand about the soul, understand about the Supreme. So the difference, karma means you're looking at it from the viewpoint of Dharma. And then you're seeing kama, you know, moksha and bhakti, right? Jnanis, then they follow Dharma, but for the purpose of liberation. But it's not that they don't know about the Supreme. And then the devotees say it's about Krishna, and they follow the processes of Dharma, and they understand they're not the body with moksha. So yes, that's why it's recommended. Because with artha as a situation, then anything that you want you can get. Right? You can get the material positions anywhere in the universe, spiritual position outside of the universe. And then with devotion, then you get the spiritual world. But the point is anything you want. So that's why it's a lower consciousness when you only pick and choose what you want, because just the economic point. Does that make sense? Like, let's say, okay, if we say there's companies that have been working, they don't necessarily do anything special for their workers. And they're focused on money. And as we said, now it's more of a popular thing that some, you know, biggest companies, I think, they can't even get together an apple that doesn't have a bite out of it. You know, it's like when you go and pick up apples, do you pick up the one with the bite in it? No, you pick up the ones without the bite, whatever it is. So big, huge companies, billion-dollar companies, then they've started using these techniques of trying to create nice, comfortable environments for the workers. Right? So it sounds nice. Oh, we can, you know, this nice environment, you know, this working together. Oh, you know, don't have meetings. We just sit around and discuss. And all these euphemistic kind of nice things. Right? They sound fabulous. So technically, where are those good qualities from? They're from Dharma. Right? Because Dharma says the essence of the Dharma is that it gives qualities that you have to have. You know, humility, your knowledge, your cleanliness, your all these different things. Right? Nard Muni, when he starts out the conversation on Varnashram, which we'll come across in this canto, he lists 30 qualities. Then all the activities are based on these 30 qualities. Right? But that's Dharma, because it's about having these qualities to perform your duties. But now in artha, it's you pick and choose which qualities you want to use only because it makes money. So the only reason that they have this nice lounge for the workers is because they found it makes more money. Right? Sit in front of a computer screen all day, your brain goes into mush. Right? Come out, sit in a nice home kind of environment. You know, instead of having to go over and buy your stuff, or, you know, there's just one little, you know, thing that you have to stand in line. You make it really comfortable. Then they go, they relax for a few minutes, they do something, they go play a game, they, you know, whatever they like. Then when they go back and sit in front of the computer, brain is not mush anymore. Right? So is it about the people? No. So it's not Dharma. It's my duty to take care of these people, whether I make profit or not. Of course, as a business person, I'm supposed to make profit. So I should take care of these people and engage them in such a way that we make profit. You understand? That's Dharma. Right? But artha is I'll make profit by engaging him in this way and dealing in this way. So you're only choosing which ones you like. So now let's say if after another 5-10 years, if there's some other companies that are, you know, big billion-dollar companies, and they don't take care of their workers, and that's one of the things, they save so much money, bang, you'll see immediately all the companies will adjust. Is that what it says? So that's the whole point, is that's the lower. That's why in the Vedic system, artha and kama are there, but they're natural, byproducts of dharma. If you have dharma, then artha and kama will come. So that's why what you're saying is that, so the Vedic system is centered on dharma, and then from that dharma, you can get any of the other five, depending on what you said, your mentality. So that's why in the Vedic system, there's one system. It accommodates everybody, and everybody can get what they want. Right? Because everybody can't get what they want from artha and kama. But everybody can get what they want from dharma.
Yeah. Having artha would corrupt the dharma. So that's why you better stick to our dharma. But when it comes to artha being a byproduct, it's then
we should
abandon.
No, but the point is if artha has come to you, what is artha?
Wealth.
What I'm saying. Wealth, okay, but and who's the deity of wealth? Lakshmi. And who does Lakshmi belong to?
And people say that Kali, in the Kali entered the gold.
Okay, and so are they living under a tree and going out begging every day?
Almost.
Almost is not good enough.
No.
You live under a tree, go out and beg, then like that. You have no home, you move around.
But I mean, you can have to die, that's why they're trying to think. How to organize things in that way. To deprive them from art.
No, but the point is since it belongs to Krishna, then taking care of artha for Krishna, then is that not duties?
Yes.
So the trouble that comes up from artha, they're avoiding. So yes, okay, there's the element of the mode of goodness that not attached, but it's also the mode of goodness. It's a weakness because then things that they could engage in Krishna's service and take responsibility for, they won't because it's trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what that was what we meant before, is they're attached to renunciation,
mm-hmm.
but it's still an attachment. Of the two, attachment to renunciation, attachment to it, sense gratification or attached attachment is lower, right? So it's a higher position, but it's still not devotional. You know what I'm saying? It may be a more sattvic kind of position, but it's still not devotional. Devotional is connecting to Krishna. So if they're comfortable in a simple way and then keep themselves busy, that's great. But the point is it has to be seen in relation to Krishna. Otherwise, it's not spiritual. It could be said to be spiritual on the platform of liberation, but not on the platform of devotion. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So the whole point is he's doing it, what his instructions, as we get to them, they'll be extremely valuable because they are correct. But his point of using it is for karma. Right? So that's what we're saying. These are the demons. So they follow the Vedic culture, but they're in the mode of passion because they follow the culture because of the benefits they'll get. It's not because simply it's their duty and they should do it, out of just, that's the proper thing. They'll do it because of the benefit. That's why it's not goodness, it's passion. The demigods, this is their position, this is what they're going to do, right? But because it's material, of course, there's going to be some passion, ignorance. But the prominence is goodness. While with the demons, the prominence is passion. Right? Not saying there's not some goodness and ignorance, but yes.
Can we see in the modern age, devotees, they kind of sometimes compare to the demons in their mentality. Even though the goal is different, but the usage of means and the modes of nature.
Where do they come from?
Those goals.
Yes, so therefore it's just their conditioning. So a time on engaging it and connecting everything to Krishna will be purified and it'll work out. You understand? So it only becomes it's a problem, but it only actually really becomes a problem if they become attached to it.
That's very good.
Yes, because the living entities become attached to whatever they work with. That's the nature. So that's why the Vedic system has at least become attached to something that's sattvic. You know what I'm saying? That's because then from sattvic getting to pure goodness is very easy, because then the form of it's exactly the same. Nothing changes. Like for, let's say we take a Vaishnav Smarta. Technically speaking, whatever he does in his life in the day, you don't have to change one thing. He's already following the perfect life recommended in the Vedas. What you change is the mentality, because now he goes from karma or jnana to bhakti. But he's already following the proper lifestyle, so that's why it's recommended. So for that person, it'll be very easy to just slot into Krishna consciousness and do everything nicely. No passion or ignorance, because their lifestyle originally is just goodness. Right? But if you come from the background of passionate ignorance, the tendency is you'll do that unless otherwise, you know, gained by association or training or things like that. Or just by devotional service, eventually over time, things adjust. So that's why these things are pointed out in here, so one knows the difference. Because basically, what are people worried about?
Gain and safety.
Gain and safety. Okay. So now all those kings and everything in the fourth, fifth, sixth canto, they didn't have gain and safety, but it was all engaged in the Lord's service nicely. And those who it wasn't, it's pointed out how it wasn't and what was the thing. Is that okay? Yeah. So that's the beauty of it, is the Vedic system. Whatever one wants, one can get. Anything one wants and within karma and jnana, you can get. And so, we're not materialistic, we're not worried about these things. It's just like, hey, you know, go to the, what do you call it, the new building out the back, you know, the last guest house. There's a gate there. Walk through the gate and then just make a 180-degree panoramic view. And then have the person repeat that statement. Is that what you're talking about? Anybody's ever been in that, behind the samadhi, there's that kind of little square building in the corner. It's got the very far out little balconies. Has anybody ever been in there? Yeah, has anybody been in there? You seen the rooms? Little dinky rooms? That was the Grihastha ashram in Mayapur. We went up the stairs, it's only 2 feet wide. That was a Grihastha ashram with common bathrooms. Huh? No, but during the 70s, that's where the Grihasthas lived. I think it was only in the 80s that the first buildings came up. You know, the Grihastha area, the first buildings came up in the 80s. So in the 70s, that's where the Grihasthas lived. Yeah, of course. But the point is that proves the point, is that, we're not interested in all that, but if we're not interested in that, why aren't people still living there? You know, I mean, it's just like this. This room here, we could put what, you know, at least 5 families. You know, and according to that, we could put 10. Yeah. You understand? Huh? Yes, but that's the point. So therefore, since we're interested in, you know, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, therefore, why not follow the system that actually awards it? You know, that's like saying, I'm hungry, I want to get something to eat, and then going to a hardware store. And the Vedas are saying, no, go down to the, you know, the supermarket, that you can get something to eat. Oh, that's so archaic, people are going to the supermarket for like that. We go down to the, you know, the techie store like that. Printers that make food. And can you eat the food? edible, oh, the stuff that's in the 3D printer. So it gets the color and everything right and all that? So you have an apple with all the...
Berries are a technology which...
Potato, at least?
Let's to create some eatable stuff to create...
But a potato? Things.
Huh?
Potato?
I don't know the details, but you can use it. So
I see.
Better to smell like oatmeal.
Okay. Yes. So they always come at me, these things. I remember it was the big thing in the like 50s and you know 60s. Is that how you know the ultimate, the future, the perfect food? And it's just like a pill, and you don't have to eat, and just take that. It has everything and all that.
Herbalized.
Huh?
Herbalized.
Yeah. Like they say, I think it's. It's that blue green algae, I think it was 53 or 52. Yeah. So, what do you call it? Then, but, you know, after a while when they actually got down and they, you know, had the spirulina and stuff like that, who wants to just eat a pill? You know, people like, you know, the whole experience of the eating and the whole scene like that. So that's the whole thing. So they come up with this kind of thing, the printer, it's all far out and this and that, and then it'll have its bad and it'll go away because who wants to eat that? Unless they can do a lasagna or something.
A friend of mine said in Europe right now they have this problem that their bodies are not burying the bodies, usually the bodies merge with earth. But nowadays they don't because they've been eating too much stuff that was genetically modified. That's why it's like they have no space for more people in like
any. They should take some advice from the Germans. They were good. Like that, or the Khmers. They were also quite good. Like Cambodia. They were. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. So. Yes. Yes.
Apparently, Kashi Kuru's knowledge is Vedanta. Does he have that because he's come from the Kuru's world, or he's trained like that in the
No, he's trained. That's just standard training. It's just like when he goes to the Gurukul. I mean, what's the first thing he's learning? He's 5 years old. They're teaching him Nyaya. Whole politics, all these different things. We would say, oh, that would be, you know, in our concept, it would be a university level, it would be a tertiary level study. You dabble in it in higher secondary. But it's only, you know, how they play games at that level.
So they'll teach for Vedanta, but they'll teach it for different purposes.
Yes. In other words, you learn all the philosophies because, how do you have a proper discussion and come to the points through Nyaya? You know, so all these different things. How is Hiranyakashipu getting his power? His austerity, that's yoga, right? Then he's going to live his lifestyle. He's burying his brother according to the rituals and this and that, so there's the karma. So as they know the philosophies, they know all these, because this is just Vedic study. But as Prabhu was pointing out, is everybody's learning the same study, but depending upon, same study, same activity, but depending upon the application, that's the difference. Right? Like, a practical example is Hindu society. One culture, one set of practices, but how many different philosophies? So that's the point, is that depending on what they want, so you have the karmis, you have the jnanis, and you have the devotees. But the culture is exactly the same. You go into the karmis' house, you'll have the same food, cooking, style of serving, interaction, discussion. Go to the jnanis, it's the same. The environment will be a little drier, but like that. You go into the devotees, it'll be the same. So they're all cooking the same food and the same techniques, serving in the same style, eating it in the same way. You understand? That way, because it's a common culture. So that's the fun part. That's what we're looking for. Have that, but they have a problem with the philosophy, but we throw that out because of the philosophy. We have philosophy, Where's the religion? So that's why the Vedic system is you have both philosophy and religion. So if you have the Vedanta philosophy with the you know the Vedic religion, then it works very nicely. That's the recommendation. So we see the demons, they follow it because they're smart. They're in the mode of passion. They want results. They follow the Vedic system. Only when you get down to Rakshasas and this and that, then they just have their own culture. In other words, you go to the demigods, you go to the cultured gentlemen and kings in India, you go down to the demons' place, it'll be the same culture. You know, slight differences in architecture and little things like that. But as far as the experience goes, it will be exactly the same. As far as how they'll deal, how they'll interact, how they'll eat, how they'll... It'll all be the same. Rakshasas, they slightly have a different way of going about it. Right. Yes. I couldn't hear the first part of what you said. Manu. Mono diet. But what do you mean by mono?
It's like maybe establishing collectively like a type of diet.
No, but when you say a type of diet, then it's left up to speculation of what is this diet? You understand? What is this clothes? What is this? If you look on the front of the BBT publications, if you go down the page after the title, after the picture and all that, it'll say Founder Acharya A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Prabhupada didn't already give us all these things. He gave us the diet, he gave us the culture, he gave us the lifestyle, he gave us the dress, he gave us the methods. Due to attachment, we avoid them. But that's the only explanation. You can say, but we can't do that. Prabhupada did that. We have this whole society, whole backup, I mean hundreds of temples, literally. We got, 600 or something? Temples and farms and this, that. We got a huge thing. Prabhupada went out alone into a country he didn't know, no facilities. And he just did what he did. He wore what he wore. He cooked what he cooked. He did kirtan the same way. Do you understand? So, and he attracted people that had never seen stuff like this before. He attracted people that had never seen stuff like this before. You understand? So that's the thing. It is the universal diet. Universal this. Say what you like. It's that every kind of constitution and nature that there is on the planet is here in India. People say what they like, but they're all here. You know, you have the eyes to see it, you can see it. You don't have, of course, you can never see it. Have you seen the Manipuris? Manipuris. Assamese. Anybody seen them?
Yeah.
Do they have kind of an oriental look? What happens when you keep going that direction? Turns into the Orient. Okay. Have you seen the big Punjabis and the like that, the Pathans and that, big guys, burly, you know, hair everywhere, you know, like that. Now if you keep going that direction, what do you get? That kind of people. You know what I'm saying? So it's like that. And then in the central you get all the more refined and all these different things like that. And then you go down south, you get the little dark, you get, you name it. They're here. I remember I was in, can't remember what was the station. It may have been Madurai Station. We were waiting for the train and all that. And this guy, I only saw him from the back walking. And he looked exactly, he was, you know, elder gentleman. But he had the kind of curly, frizzy hair. It was, you know, going gray. and the way he was walking in exactly means if I had been standing in a bus station in, you know, Mississippi, the way he moved, I mean, it was exactly the same. So that's the whole thing, is that there's no lifestyle, there's no physical appearance, there's no geography that's not here. Because it's the punya bhumi. It's from here you get all the attachments, and because you have that without the punya of devotional service of the Vedic culture, therefore then one's born outside in the same kind of environments. Does that make sense? And so then that one thing becomes, you know, on its own, so then it develops without the consistency of the Vedic culture, so then it turns into its own little thing. You understand? So that's the whole point is that this is the one thing that relates to everybody. And those who say it doesn't, it's just personal attachment. So, because the variety of stuff that's there, like that, means all the techniques of any cuisine is already in the Indian cuisine. It's all there. If you can cook Indian, you can cook anything. And I've seen it in Indian families are good cooks, and, you know, because they live in a modern environment, then, you know, the kids are exposed to all the Western food. They can cook the same thing in their house, you know, as just a regular thing. You know what I'm saying? How many houses in the West, in the house themselves, they could, you know, just on the, just at the, you know, just they decide to make burgers? Western family. No, you go out, you buy burgers. No one makes burgers at home. You have a barbecue, then maybe you go out and do that if what you barbecue is edible, you know, and you haven't burnt your arm off and, you know, stuff like that. But you understand? They can make that, they make the French fries, they do everything. Nobody does that. So they can do anything. Anything you want, they can make it. The relationships, they're all there. You know, it's like we have a name, mother, father, grandparents, grandmother, grandfather, you know, cousin, sister-in-law, brother-in-law. Did I miss one? Nephew, niece, aunt, uncle. But otherwise, you have to then define second cousin, maternal grandfather. But in India, all those have names, separate names. So there's 50 family relationships that have actual separate names with specific relationships with each one of them. You understand? So whatever anybody's looking for anywhere on the planet, it's already in the Vedic culture. So it is the culture. We don't have to speculate. Is that good? Prabhupada talks about it in his purport. Prabhupada gave it back in the 60s. And we're still, oh, where is the, you understand? That's the thing, is, oh, you know, we're Westerners, we're different. What's different? When Pizarro showed up in Southern America, one of the main things how he was successful is that they're so dirty as a people that they carried so much disease, and when they got there, is that the local natives died of all the diseases that they carried. And then we're going to say this culture is superior? I think the concept of everybody taking a bath on a regular basis more than once a week is fairly new. Maybe since the 90s or something. Previously, before, everyone took bath once a week. Indians take bath twice a day. Standard. Guys that live in the street take bath twice a day. Right? The guy in America, the guys that live in the street probably never take a bath. Does that make sense? So in other words, whatever is there, the eternal principles is already, our Prabhupada already gave it. So we don't have to speculate. We have to figure out how to apply it. How to learn it, When Prabhupada was traveling with the devotees in 71, he asked the girls to, when they were staying in these high class houses, to go in and learn from the ladies what is all the ladies' stuff. They didn't learn. They learned a little cooking. I remember once in a class, some next generation girls, and they asked, well, you know, we're talking about something, is how often are you supposed to wash your hair? I turned to one of the Prabhupada disciple ladies and said, how often? She had no idea. She didn't know, none of her friends know, she never heard of it. I had to come here and ask some Indian ladies here, what's the standard? Prabhupada already asked them to do it. They did not do it. Cooking, yes. That, you know, Jamuna Devi made a fabulous book. So many books. And did her book do well? Right? She got first place in the year when it came out. So this idea, oh, Vedic cooking is not this, that. You know, she got first place. Not in India. I think it was in Canada. Does this make sense? So they just don't learn these things, and so they don't know. Right. Hindu. You said Hindu. No, what did you say? No, I couldn't hear the word. Indian. That's the academic's trick to make it that, oh, there's India, it's a country, America, it's a country, and so this and that. This comes out of America, this one. It's Indian, but how is it Indian? Where is it Indian? When did Prabhupada say it's Indian? So the point is they've said it. Those who come up with this philosophy, it's their idea. It's not Prabhupada's idea. Like, just for example, you go into any high-end kind of store that's selling stuff for ladies, anywhere on the planet, do they have pashmina and shawls and that kind of stuff is one of the things they sell? Or you don't know. Do they have one section, or at least they have a few? Yeah. So, where is that from? Yes, but where is it from? They're called pashminas. Is that an American name? The local Cherokee, that's what they used to call them. You know, or what are those guys that live on the poles out in the bayou? Huh? The Cajuns, yes. It's a Cajun name. It's a, you know, it's a name, you know, given by those, you know, guys out on the West Coast, you know, that were doing the, you know, getting the gold, or it's Indian. It's from here. And so this idea is, oh, this stuff can't be used everywhere. If you use the Indian stuff in the West, you'll be so much more sophisticated than everybody else. The only people who will be able to keep up with you, what they're wearing, nothing costs less than about $500 to $700. I'm saying nothing. A scarf, $700. The people that wear that stuff, they'll be able to be as sophisticated. But you can go to Calcutta, buy yourself a, you know, $60 sari, and you can look as good as them. Complicated? No, it originates when Krishna then revealed everything to Lord Brahma in Brahmaloka. And then he expanded, then there's Manu, and then Manu gave it to mankind. So that's what I'm saying, it started in the universe, then it came down to here. The point is, okay, is there no, let's say, can you just be relaxed and just, you know, just like you're in your living room if you're in a Greyhound bus station in America? Just leave your luggage there, go that, let your kids run around and play. Not a good idea. Okay, so is that America? Let's say I'm driving through West Virginia and everything is just trash. And it's more of a, it would be the, and the color would be that which, if you put all the colors of light together, then you get a particular color. That kind of trash. Is that, okay, so now we can say is the bus stands and then all these rundown places, that's America. Have you ever gone to streets other than Fifth Avenue and all these places like that? Total slums. You know, London, you go outside of a few streets, you know, out of Westminster and that, terrible stuff. Falling apart, running down, not taking care of the lawns, nothing. And so am I going to take that and say, okay, this is Western culture? So if you're going to do that, then yes, you say, I came out of the airport, there's a bunch of rickshaw wallahs there, and everybody harassing, I get into the car, the roads are crazy, I come to Mayapur, there's some things like this and that, and that's India. And if that's all your vision is, then why not apply that everywhere in the world? Right? Because everywhere in the world, except for their few main streets and a few things, is all trash. So why is it the West is so wonderful? In India, there's nothing to learn from them. But there's also, as the Shastra points out, there's the adhikar, or the qualification of the person who's learning. Therefore, they have no cultural qualification to learn anything out of their own very narrow background. Out of that, they can't learn anything from anyone because they can't see culture. You don't have culture, you can't see it. You understand? Someone who has a sense of, let's say, aesthetics, they go into a place, what do they notice? The aesthetics. Now, say someone's an engineer, they go and see a building, what do they look at? Yes. If someone's into finances and economics, when they go into something, they'll look at efficiency of that. Someone's into relationships and interactions, they'll see that. Someone goes in psychology, they'll see that. Right? Does that make sense? So if someone goes into somewhere and sees no culture, what does that mean? They have no culture. So we'll break here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samavita Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prema.